One of our favorite people we've ever met doing this podcast is trans musician Tracy Tyler, whose fun-loving personality and big voice has entertained us for years.
Tracy has a new video for her single, This I Know, where she floats around in the forest looking like a magical sex goddess that's powered by the light of 1,000 stars. It's a low-budget project, but Tracy really shines.
Today, Tracy Tyler joins us to talk about how her music has evolved over the years, why she's so inspired by Air Supply, and what are her thoughts about the new trans celebrities shining bright in entertainment.
Plus, what's a manlet and where do I get one?
Was RuPaul triggered at the finale of RuPaul's Drag Race by Shea Coulee's Coming to America tribute dress?
And farewell to the gay Chicago pioneer Chuck Renslow, founder of the much-celebrated International Male Leather Conference and Contest. He was 87.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Right now, you have Feast of Fun in your ears because for the last 13 years, a listener just like you took the time to support this one-of-a-kind, in-depth programming. If you like the show, please make a donation at feastoffun.com/donate. And if you didn't like the show, make a donation anyway to help us improve.
I'm dripping with juices.
It's Tracy Tyler, everybody! Our favorite big voice, fun-loving gal who started her podcasting career with us under the name Big Girls Eat Cake in the band, and now is pursuing a solo project under the name December Rising. Welcome back to Feast of Fun.
Hi, guys. I missed you.
I missed you. I haven't seen you since my birthday.
I know, which was like the party of the century.
Oh. I'm not that old.
I never asked. How did you get those lights to change colors?
We had
so mesmerized.
You can do that with any light you want. You want me to
that
do it right now?
Cool.
You just have to go through the internet.
Smartphones and technology.
You guys are technological marvels.
It is. We live in amazing times. No, they're actually color changing light bulbs. Look behind you.
Oh.
Ooh. Got you excited. We changed the room for people who can't see into the colors of the transgender flag because our friend here, Tracy Tyler, is for a long history, you were one of the most recognizable, most loved transgender figures in popular culture.
And then you ruined it all by coming on the podcast.
Right?
And, you know, when we first started having you on the show, and you were really, like, so wonderfully fun. You were a feast of fun talking about your sexuality, your romantic life, your experience as a trans woman. Your hookups and your time in the suburbs here in Chicago. I think our audience was really fascinated because we didn't have that experience, that voice in mainstream media. And, you know, and especially in the last couple of years, I mean, we've had so many trans women become media sensations that, you know, Tracy Tyler, the pioneer, may be
whatever
left behind, but not forgotten.
Yeah.
So we were on Facebook and we were, you know, looking for interesting and fun things to talk about on the show. And we found your new single, This I Know, where you portray yourself as a sex goddess in the forest preserves of Chicago. You're in the forest preserves where people
like
go
a
hook
magical
up.
Elf.
You're an alien. Aren't you an alien?
Well, you can think of however it is, but I basically it's, you know, I you know, personally I follow an earth religion and I
you're Wiccan.
I'm not Wiccan, no. I just consider myself a Gnostic pagan, which Gnostic means knowledge. And, you know, I borrow from here. But
it's your spice rack of religion.
Yes, it definitely is.
Your Jesus,
a lot
too.
Of Eastern thought and everything. So I just, you know, the song is about, you know, the lyrics are, you know, give when you have nothing to give, you know, and know that it will be returned. And, you know, it's kind of the whole secret, you know, like... spread love. And, you know,
your mindset affects the outcome.
Yeah, well, or just be good to each other. Yeah. And just basically the song is saying, you know, we have the power, so set it free. And we are the people to let it be. And, you know, we are the people to make it happen. And so, you know, this album.
Can I get a praise the goddess up in here?
You know, praise this album has, you know, the songs are a lot. You know, my last album was, you know, very dark and about kind of the underground of transition. And, you know, then by the end of the end, I wove it all together with poetry. And by the end of the album, you know, this was my first album. By the end of the album, it was, you know, I'd come full circle and had been transitioned. And you know, the album told a story. This album, I just wanted to write some songs about hope. And, you know, with everything going around in the country, what happened in November last year, I just really wanted to say to the world, you know, we have the power to let it be, you know, you know,
singing words of wisdom.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
When Mother Mary comes to you.
You've got the power, you know.
Yeah, this new album, I released it in February called I'll Always Remember. It was, you know, this new album, it's not like a lighthearted album by any means. There's songs about suicide and death and disappointment and feeling disappointed about your life and stuff, you know. But every song is about a song about hope, and this is definitely one of them. And I just released the new video, and we're making more videos for the album, and I'm super excited to release those soon. So anyway, I love this album. I really, really love this album.
Why don't we listen to a little clip of This I Know?
Okay.
Love for 80s culture and music and aesthetics.
I do. Well, I'm a product of the 80s, so
there's a lot of Air Supply and Wilson Phillips. Well, is that like an inspiration or influence for you, as a musician?
My first album was very much more, I wanted to be a little bit more avant-garde. This album, I really wanted it to echo the 70s love songs of Air Supply and Melissa Manchester and Aunt Murray. And, you know, that's the music that I truly, truly love. And it's my little guilty pleasure. But, you know, like with artists like Adele and you know, people of that genre, I really think that it was time to do a album of mostly love songs. I mean, there's some fun songs on there, like Diva in a Man's World, that, you know, where you know that December Rising doesn't take themselves seriously. So
you used to troll the Air Supply forums for their official fan sites.
I did.
What did you tell us the story? So you're a diehard fan. You know every single one of their songs, and you perform them a lot at karaoke clubs.
I was briefly in an Air Supply cover or tribute band.
What was the name of the band?
Air Edition.
I thought it was called Blowjob.
Yeah, well, I sang the Russell Hitchcock myself. Part, and there was a girl, that a dark-haired girl, actually, that sang the Graham Russell part, you know, so...
So which one's which one? The short little brunette, and you were the blonde.
I sang
blonde.
His parts. Oh, you I were was the blonde that sang the dark-haired okay. parts. And
he was the main singer, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. But Graham Russell sang a lot of stuff, mm-hmm. too, especially in the 70s, like they're...
And so when Lady Gaga, there was a lot of media uproar when Lady Gaga released Born This Way, and everyone was thinking this is probably going to be something related to, you know, an Air Supply. So we had the lyrics and you went online and sort of were, you know, you are a psychic and
right.
And you took the melody of an 80s pop song and set it to Lady Gaga's lyrics, which it turned out that Born This Way was set to the chorus, to the chords of Madonna's right. Express Yourself.
Which, you know what, we had no idea, but we, for some reason, we knew that that song was a copy of another song. I don't
it
know
felt
how
like
we,
it was derivative,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. I don't know how. So
well, because
so,
we've examined her music and we looked at what it yeah. comes from and what's it's inspired by. So we're like, what's it going to be like? And you said it would probably be like Air Supply.
Let's do an Air Supply. So we yeah. just
well, because Alejandro was already copying a lot of Ace of Base.
Oh, okay.
Right? You know?
Yeah.
And so you did that and we posted it on YouTube and people were just like, this is not the real song.
Yeah. They were like, they hated it. I don't care.
But you were prophetic, you know? And then when Mark and I got married, you sang at our wedding.
I did.
Our virtual wedding. Do you remember the song?
Yeah, it was from Song and Dance, the Andrew Lloyd Webber musical Song and Dance. It was the song, what was that song called?
Can you sing a little bit of it?
It was, I have never felt like this, but once I'm lost for words. That song, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the happiest days of my life.
It's really thrown me. What's the song called?
I don't know. You just sang it, and we were like,
I don't
okay.
know, it's just our wedding.
Do you know it, Mark?
No, we were gonna. What well, we were gonna have? Only the. We wanted you to sing The Nights Get Better. How did, was that
only it? The nights get better since I found you.
Whoa. And you're like, even no. the nights are better now that we're here together. Even the nights are better since I found you.
Do you sing that in karaoke?
I don't. I do a lot of s'mores that and stuff.
Oh,
and
really?
Well, you're really good at imitating Dennis DeYoung from Styx.
I do him. Don't
Can you
I?
Do I'm sailing?
No, wait. Babe, I'm leaving. I'll say it once again and somehow try to smile. I must be going. The train is on its way and I'll be me. Sing you, cause you know it's you, babe, giving me the courage and the strength I need. Please believe yes. that it's you, babe.
Oh my. It's like a Girl. Sped up two or three times.
Right, right.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's so good to hear your voice and hearing you sing really makes me happy.
You guys make me happy. You guys always put me in a good mood.
Aw, because you actually listen to the podcast sometimes.
You're a fan.
I do. I have a long commute to work every day. And so I do listen to you guys.
Through your Xfinity FM. I don't know where. How do you listen to podcasts?
Podcast Addict.
You use an app like that and then you just subscribe to it there.
Yeah, and it updates you guys. And then, you know.
I was driving to work and I was listening to NCR. And they had this really like pandering piece. They were like, summer's here and it's road trip season. We're going to take calls from you listeners on your favorite podcast. So I called them up and I'm like, I want to give a shout out to Feast of Fun, nowhere LGBT podcast in the world. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. And they were just like,
well, yeah, plug the show.
I was plugging the shit of it. Yeah. And she said, what makes Feast of Fun special? You know, and I was like, well, it's a podcast me and my husband do. And we get to talk to a lot. It's ultimately a show about being an artist and the making of culture. And we focus a lot on LGBT artists that don't get to be heard on mainstream platforms like NCR. Yeah. And I said NCR really quickly so they would just hear NPR. And, you know, because I'm not into piss sports or anything like that. That's why I say NCR, respect. And she cut me off and she was like, I heard that shady comment about us, Fausto.
She said that to you like offline or
something? No, yeah, she cut me off and then she was like, that's some shade. And I'm like, but you guys don't do a lot of LGBT programming. You don't even talk. And of course, so then they scrambled to talk about Chuck Renslow's death. Right after they cut me off and went to that. So it'd be like, Thiefato, we care about LGBT people. Mm. And so Chuck Renslow, the founder of IML, one of the greatest contributors to gay culture, pioneer in gay press and in gay bars, passed away this past week and made it till Pride. And then he went to the great leather dungeon in the sky.
And he's in stirrups now, I'm sure.
And Mark and I, we met at his bar at the Eagle.
We met at the Eagle way back in 1999. So I'm very thankful that Chuck created spaces for a lot of gay men to come together. And I guess he got his start. He was a photographer and he would photograph the guys that were in the ballet.
Oh, really?
Back in the day, in the 50s, you couldn't do porn. And so he did little magazines where guys would pose in like these posing straps. And so you'd have like they to cover up their junk. And so he started making money that way.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, he was always under investigation by the feds because they're always like, oh, yeah, that stuff was so heavily policed and looked at until the obscenity laws were pulled up in, what was it, in like 67 or something like that?
Isn't that ridiculous?
Oh, it's so crazy.
This is a man who ran gay bars, gay magazines, was photographing hunks before Stonewall, all the way up to the present day. Mm. And luckily, we got to know him pretty well. And he had a lot of interesting things to say. His major thing said, you know, there's a lot, sex appeal can transcend a lot of things, but it's really hard to transcend class.
Mm. Yeah.
That, you know, especially when it comes to LGBT people, we're very classist.
Mm. We kind of usually stay within our own class system in some ways.
I can see that.
And this is somebody who's, you know, seen people fucking for years and years and years and years. You know, and mostly it was just him, we're mostly commenting on running Man's Country, one of the biggest gay bathhouses. Uh-huh. And, you know, how he, throughout the centuries, the decades, would see how gay men's sexuality would evolve or change. And he said, it really hasn't changed very much. Like, if you go into Man's Country or Steamworks or any of these gay bathhouses today, it's pretty much the same experience as it was, you know, 30, 40 years ago.
They're still doing the same poppers.
Yeah.
I bet you lube is better now.
Oh, my God. You know? I listen to and I read stories about gay men having anal sex in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And they were using cans of Crisco. I'm not joking here. And I guess some people really like Crisco, but I look at it and I just think biscuits, you know?
You get everything back except a tablespoon, right? Remember that commercial when you were a kid? They'd fry stuff in Crisco and it all comes back except for a tablespoon.
So you know it's something funny. You know I'm always going to talk about something dirty when I say, you know.
Tell us, Tracy.
When we were little boys, when I was growing up in junior high, we used to go to the refrigerator and get a stick of butter. Yeah.
And what'd you do with that butter?
And
what do you think?
I've jerked off butter before.
It melts really fast when it gets down there between your legs.
Did you use butter-flavored Crisco, Crisco, lard, or just old-fashioned butter? Or margarine? Mm-hmm.
Just a stick of butter.
You like the butter.
Good old-fashioned butter. What's oily? Yes. It's fatty and greasy.
It's greasy and yummy to taste, too.
Listeners, we want you guys to chime in. What gives you, you know, an old-school lube? We're talking, you know, before KY. Mm-hmm. Olive oil, corn
vegetable oil.
Oil,
coconut oil.
Peanut butter.
Peanut oil. You don't want to use peanut
butter. No. Crisco, margarine.
Vaseline.
What gives you...
Baby oil.
Old school lube.
Conditioner.
Yeah. I really liked the Aveeno oatmeal conditioner. I'm sorry, not an oatmeal conditioner, just the lotion. it puts the lotion on its skin.
I remember in college, I took a shower with this guy, and we used shampoo. And I was so sore afterwards.
Yeah.
Shampoo will eat the skin right off your body.
Oh, yeah.
When rubbed on it too hard.
Oh, for sure. I had a friend who's just like, he was doing laundry. He's just like, he pulled out the laundry detergent and he's just like, oh, let's just see, you know, whatever. And he's like, it burned his skin. He's like, I couldn't use my dick for like 3 days.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, that doesn't seem like a very smart idea to use laundry detergent.
But ouch. I do highly recommend butter.
You still do it with
butter. She's hungry.
I don't know.
She's hungry.
We should make some cookies for you.
No. I heard that actually. What sweets kind of girl are you?
If you're doing like a deep dish pizza, you know, actually a lot of people in Chicago, they actually use butter and not olive oil because it gives them a browner, crisper crust.
I think with a deep dish, traditionally you're supposed to use butter in it, right?
Yeah. But, you know, if you go to like Pizza Hut or those places, they just use, you know, God, no. Trans fats. Yeah, no transphobia here, but.
They probably use like the really bad stuff that comes out of the squirt machine at the movie theater.
that fake butter. Yeah.
It's like got every bad fat in it, and it's supposed to like give you a heart attack in the middle of the movie.
Right? I don't get it anymore. I used to. The Fausto got me turned off of it.
Yeah, it always makes me sick to my stomach. Like I like want to like vomit. It's like.
We found out Chuck Renslow died like pretty much like within the hour.
With hours, yeah.
And
today?
It was last week. And so Mark had the really brilliant idea of getting a bouquet of flowers, and we went to the gates where the eagle used to be, and we put up a little bouquet there.
That's sweet of you.
We're hoping that like other people would be inspired and turn into like a Princess Diana thing.
I never went down there to see, so I don't. I guess they're cremating him, so they don't know when they're going to have. They'll have a private ceremony, but they'll also have some kind of public memorial too. So,
and you know, this podcast exists in the shadows and stands on the shoulders of really great Chicago LGBT media pioneers like Chuck Renslow, and certainly a lot of our early content was interviews of people at IML. So. Chuck was really a great guy to have as a friend and as a person in our community. So his loss is definitely deeply felt by many people, including us.
Yeah, he saw a lot. You know, it's amazing, too, is like he didn't start the IML conference until he was like 47, 48 years old.
Really?
Yeah. So it was
kind you're of never too late in life to pursue your dreams
and make something really big happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's never too late.
That's the key word.
That's why I had a dream where RuPaul and I were in a graveyard. Like Adam's family had like funny things on the tombstones, you know?
Really?
Like here was Ira. She had a nice ass. She, you know, something, you know, like tombstone jokes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was just kind of like giggling.
And you were there with RuPaul.
RuPaul standing there in his like suit, you know, looking kind of like, you know, Kermit based. You know, I think of like RuPaul looks kind of like Kermit the Frog.
I can see that.
A little bit, right?
And a so black you stand, Pee Wee Herman.
Yeah. And so I'm standing there and RuPaul's like, your time has come.
And your time has come. Oh, how and shady.
I was like, to go into the grave? And it's like, no, to be on Drag Race. And I was like, but I thought the show's over. You know, the season's over. And it's like, it's never too late.
I think you should.
And I think the message is it's never too late to pursue your dreams, whatever those dreams may be. Yeah. That's ultimately why, you know, dreams are not necessarily literally what they're about.
Is that your dream to do that?
I would love to be on RuPaul's Drag Race, and I think I actually would be really good on it. I'm not so a good dancer. I'm a heavier person now, so I'd be like Darian Lake.
Sing, and you can make costumes.
You have a couple of moves.
Yeah. We gotta help you with your makeup skills.
Yeah.
I'm trying to say that with love.
I take all the help.
Makeup is actually pretty good.
It's
sometimes.
Got better, right?
You could teach me about contouring.
I taught you about using your eyebrows as the crease of your lid, right?
No, we haven't talked about that.
You mask them out now?
Yeah, he does.
I remember I did that for you? Like,
I think you did that for Mark.
Oh, yeah.
It was for me.
Yeah.
And so...
Now, Foster's good at
masking. Daphne Dumont.
Mm-hmm. We did a Christmas special, if you guys go to YouTube, where it's Candy Dick, was your drag name.
That was me, yeah. I was in the blue glitter. Mm-hmm.
And Mark was Daphne Dumont, and I was Altina Obama Bouvier.
That was fun.
And we were giving up drag, because drag, I think it was RuPaul's drag, I had a ruined drag.
Had done fucked up drag.
And this is before Jasmine Masters said that, but, you know, like, a lot of people were just like, I'm done. So, there, you know, the community was disrespectful, and you came in as a warm, maternal, loving figure and brought us, put us all together.
I remember about that. I remember it kept screwing the lines up. I was never good at, like, doing lines on a video.
Well, because you're a trained stage actor.
I am, but I don't. Yeah. I don't.
But we
know
didn't
that
even have
day.
Lines. We just fed you some lines. Just come in and say something like
you were
this.
Like, yeah, you were like just improv, and I was just horrible at it.
And I have a feeling too. Is like you guys were out somewhere and you came home, and I was just putting drag on. You're like, what's going on? I'm like, let's do a video.
Right? That was fun.
Well, it was. Mark sent us to go to the grocery store to buy some cookies and ice cream.
Yeah.
And when we came back, Mark was like, already in drag. And I was like, oh, great. So we stayed up till 3 a.m. doing that video.
That was fun, yeah.
Back when you used to spend the night.
I know, I used to always. We've had some good times together, you guys.
I know, we've been on adventures.
It's been like 15 years that we've been friends.
No.
It hasn't, well, okay.
Felt like 15.
I've lived in Schaumburg for 10. So I've been out in Schaumburg now for 10 years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I used to, when I lived over on Birchwood in West Rogers Park, I used to, that's when I started
hanging out with us.
Yeah.
So with the December Rising.
Yeah, maybe 12 years.
For the audience's benefit, December Rising is like an exciting new direction that you're going in your creative career as a musician.
Yeah. And, you know, okay, so here's the thing. So I, you know, in the 90s, you know, I did some work with some artists and some background vocals and some indie labels and stuff. And then I kind of got out of it and, you know, got distracted by my transition and everything. And now, and I just realized.
Distracted by your transition?
Well, no, just, you know, just consumed by it, you know.
It was a time consuming and resource consuming process.
And I really always thought that, you know,
there's
a reason why
trans people have the butterfly as a symbol because. For so many trans people, they're sort of like, you know, cocoon
right.
while they're, you know, getting control or shaping their bodies and their lives the way they want it.
Not to go into a long, lengthy story about, you know, what led me to develop my own music project and solo stuff. But I just have always, I thought, you know, I'm not getting any younger. And I thought, you know, if I don't put out a CD and when I turn 50 someday, I don't want to look back and say, God, I should have did that, you know? And because I've always been like such a perfectionist and like if it wasn't perfect, I didn't want to do it. And then once I got over that hump and realized that perfection is not perfect, like there's flaws in perfection. And what's beautiful is imperfection, and what is human is imperfection. And so when I got over that and realized that it just has to be good and not perfect, you know? And I realized,
there's something about that,
it.
Like that procrastination in some ways is a form of perfectionism. Cause when you say somebody is a perfectionist, it's like they want things to be so perfect that they often end up not doing anything.
Yeah.
Because they're like, it's not going to live up to whatever standards, or I'm not, you know, I can't hear the critique about it or I don't know how to improve it. So I'm just going to leave it the way it is, or like, I'm not going to do it at all.
Yeah, so December Rising was born, and that's my baby. And you know, I wrote the songs, I produced the songs, I recorded the songs, I programmed the keyboards, I sang the backups, sang the leads.
Did you record it at home?
Yeah, I did everything. I mastered it, and
that's quite the undertaking.
Yeah, I released it.
Let's talk about the video you did in the woods because we saw
the forest preserve.
The forest preserve. So we're like, is that the forest preserve by where you live?
Is that my apartment complex?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it's in the backyard, basically. So,
and you know, this is my fourth video. The other videos, you know, they're just low budget indie videos, and you know, the other ones, I you know. the one was real goth and fun. You know, it just, it's my creative outlet. It's, you know, I hope people that enjoy it and, and like, you know.
But you shot it with your phone and the selfie stick?
Yeah, I with a selfie stick, a tripod, my phone. I also used a real camera, a real movie camera. And, but some of the stuff with the selfie stick was on my phone and, you know, it's all editing and fun. And I'm filming another, video for the song So Close on this coming Saturday. So I'm super excited about that.
What's the concept?
Wow, you'll have to wait and see. No, but it's going to take place in a parking garage.
Really?
Yes. So it'll be fun.
I didn't realize I'd be so horny. That's what that people always like. I think James Mansfield went up to me and was like, because I say horny on the show a lot. And that's, you know, quoting you for many years, you were always talking about your sexuality. And but now you're, you know, a good old fashioned Wiccan woman.
I'm not Wiccan, but
you're empowered.
You know, one about this album, you know, one of the songs I'm so proud about is the song called For Me. And it's really about, you know, being bullied and, you know, about being in school and being bullied. And that, and basically it, you know, it's saying that, you know, now is the time, stand up. This is my destiny. You know, it's really being empowering myself to be who I want to be and be, you know, be free to, you know, be a creative person and create art and make art and make music. And even though people may tell you you can't or you won't, you know, or you're too old or, you know, you're trans or whatever they want to tell you, you know, basically it's, you know, you're better than that, I say in the song. And so it's a song that I'm super proud of. I don't know. I put a lot into this CD that it just, I really.
Well, should we take a listen to it?
Yeah. Please.
Let's listen to it.
Yeah.
Sandra Billings said on this podcast that part of the, you know, thing about trans people that causes controversy is that it awakens in people who have not pursued their dreams, their anxiety when they see another person fulfilling their destiny. And it reminds them that maybe I have put my own well-being aside and not been able to pursue that dream that I had. And so trans people awaken in all of us this message, this desire, this universal human need to pursue our dreams. And I think that's that in some ways that's what your song's trying to touch on as well, right?
I would agree with that. I think also too that, you know, people react in strange ways to transgendered people because we question the norm where people grow up thinking that this is who they are. This is how they have to live their life. These are their set rules. Mm-hmm. And we break the rules. And gay people, too. You know, we break the rules. We make new rules for ourselves.
Well, that's what it means to be a nonconformist, right?
Of course, yeah.
Both in your sexuality and your gender and your art.
Right, definitely. So I think that threatens people, and you know, but I think, you know,
it threatens them because they feel like, why you get to be whoever you want to be, and here I'm stuck with this kids.
Well, we're raised with these rules, and for some of these things, the rules for a reason, and other reasons, the rules are just arbitrary in some ways, and so it's hard to sometimes really distinguish why that is, and you have to really kind of think these things through and be a concrete thinker.
Yeah, well,
isn't that what Shirley Felt said on this podcast?
I was hoping you'd pick up on that.
That's I'm a concrete thinker.
It I was means like, my what brain's made out of concrete.
Yeah, it's a cement mixer going.
Well, you know, the song For Me is, you know, basically, you know, when I was younger, I always, you know, sang very feminine and you know, as people was always like, well, you know, you can be in the chorus, but you can't be the lead. And, you know, it always told me that I couldn't. And you know, I had some success, you know, in my early 20s. But then when I got older, you know, I thought, well, I'm trans and I'm getting older. And, you know, why would I put out a CD? You know, what am I going to, you know? And, you know, I'm not like I'm trying to become like some superstar, the next Britney Spears or something, you know. But I, you know, I said, you know, well, screw them. I'm not old enough. It doesn't matter that I'm trans. It doesn't matter that I may sing androgynous or however you want to classify me as. I'm going to make art. And whether you like the art, whether you don't, it's not up to me to... It's not my job to make sure that you like my art. Mm-hmm. You either like it or you don't. Mm-hmm. So,
but your album cover, you chose a very androgynous image of yourself, even though you wear a lot of makeup, you have a lot of eyeshadow, and you know, it's a very neutral image. You're wearing a black turtleneck. Can you talk a little bit about why you chose that image to represent you?
I think because this album is really about being stripped down. I'm not about the fluff and about the lightheartedness of life. I'm really about the emotion of life and about the emotion of being trans and about the emotion of love and the emotion of heartbreak and the emotion of loss and
your emo.
Maybe
about the emotions.
Yeah. Maybe I'm post emo. I couldn't go on there with some like get up, you know, all over. You know, my first album cover was really dark and I was in a graveyard and, you know, because it was a dark album about the death of the old me and the beginning of the new me. And, you know, that first album was really a story about my transition. And now that I've transitioned and I'm done and here I am, it's just me. And, you know, FYI, women don't walk around with like tons of eye makeup on all day. And, you know,
in Latin America, they do.
If they're fabulous.
Yeah. Well, in the suburbs, they don't.
Doctors are warning to women who have vaginas, don't put glitter on them. So I don't know if you guys heard this about putting rhinestones, gluing them
Vajazzling.
Vajazzling your vajayjay was all the rage. And I guess now glitter vaginas is all the rage. And doctors are saying it's very different than putting rhinestones on there because the glitter can get up in there and cause a mess.
Well, there's all those creases and crevasses and things. And
it scratches up.
It'll just, and it can just stick around, right?
Yeah, glitter is the herpes of the arts and crafts world. And once you put glitter on your body, it never leaves.
I still can't believe that people put it next to their eyes because
I used to put it for years. I put it on my eye makeup and never got once.
I've never had glitter in my eyeballs.
But is it maybe that's a different kind of glitter?
If you use the very fine arts and crafts, yeah. I think you can get away with it. But I like a lot of people use the art school pharmacy. Coarse glittery one. Yeah. And I just think that's probably not good to put near your eyes or around your. Parts, male or female. Some people
say that glitter is not very good for the environment either. Like you shouldn't wash it down the drain because then like it can get into like fishes, like fish get attracted to it. And so they try and eat it. And then it's like it wreaks havoc with their system. You wouldn't want it in a fish any more than you'd want it in a vagina.
Yeah, well, I think that would cause problems in the vagina.
Well, even like those micro beads that people used to have like in the soap. A lot of places have outlawed them.
I know.
You won't have them because they were like clogging up places and they were finding them in like dead fish.
Now, I want you guys to weigh in on this one because it's a very controversial and it's a little bit link baity because of the fact that it may not, it's stretching the truth here about the reality of medical miracles. Okay. But there's a new story in Pink News that trans women will soon have access to womb transplants so they can carry children, much like cisgendered women already do. And so what happens is that in the UK and other countries, they have a public health service system and they want to equal service to all kinds of people, and they've been already successfully doing uterine transplants on women in Sweden, where 5 children have been born as a result of the procedure similar to the one doctors are now working towards for trans women. And so it's bringing up a lot of discussions and on whether money and resources should be spent in the UK to extending the uterine transplant services to trans women so they can develop and carry their own children, like Arnold Schwarzenegger fictitiously did in the movie Junior.
So what would happen here is that they would have to save their sperm from before they transition, right? Mm-hmm. Or could they still have their sperm and a womb at the same time?
I'm not sure if how that process would work. But this is the thing about it is maybe, in my understanding about the human body and genetics and hormones, it seems like maybe this procedure might be successful in 50 or 100 years from now, but not in the next couple of years.
Well,
or so.
you never know.
The article makes it
sound. The way science works, though, sometimes is that you can work at something for 100 years and then one day it just like it magically happens to the next. They just discover something and you can have it done in no time at all. Tracy, would you want a womb and how many wombs would you want?
And how soon can you get an abortion? I can't wait to get a fake womb so I can get an abortion.
Well, I would hope that they don't cut the funding to Planned Parenthood so I can.
Well, this is in the UK. There's no Planned Parenthood in the UK.
Okay, so I would love to have a womb, but I think that's just so far-fetched. So, I mean, how would you, like, a woman's body, like, nourishes the baby through the womb and stuff? Like, that's not good, like,
With the right hormones, you could do anything, right?
I don't think so.
Because what the womb does is just it makes the placenta, but you'd have to have a good blood source for it is what it is, right?
I don't know. That just is so silly. You know, I remember years ago, it was like the Donahue show or something where they had a trans woman on there that had a baby in her stomach and they were...
she had a baby in her stomach?
It was... I don't
she
know.
She swallowed it.
But it was so far-fetched and...
Well, when Christine Jorgensen came out, I think she was one of the first people in the world to make a media sensation as a trans woman, and the press treated her as if she was fully able to have children. And so they compared Christine Jorgensen in the 60s, I believe, to the nuclear bomb, meaning it just shattered all expectations of gender and medical possibilities. And then, of course, Christine Jorgensen, I believe in her 50s, later in life, pursued a cabaret singing career.
Did she?
Yeah. I think she hit it right off the bat, though. I think as soon as she started before. Yeah.
I'm reading her Wikipedia, and then so she was like,
I know doing definitely that she came out in like touring. The early 50s, but she was definitely touring in the 60s.
Yeah, up to the very end of her life. Yeah. Oh. She was doing public speaking engagements and demanded an apology from Spyro Agnew for calling.
Spyro Agnew?
Yeah, for calling one politician the Christine Jorgensen of the Republican Party. She did not get her apology.
Well, I don't know about having a baby in some womb that they're going to implant, but I would definitely like to try getting pregnant.
Tracy, butt I'm babies don't that. Live. You know, did you watch the finale of RuPaul's Drag Race?
I did.
Yeah, what did you think?
I love Sasha.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love
Sasha
her.
Sasha Velour, the winner.
Yeah, amazing. Like, well, I thought that she was really the only one that pulled out the tricks and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm.
Which you kind of need to when you're in that big of a level of a stage. Yeah. You really need to wow.
I mean, I was a little disappointed with her second lip sync, but she blew everyone away with the first one, mm-hmm. with the feather, the rose petals and stuff. If you go on YouTube and look her up, like some of her performances are on there. She's so creative, like with the posters, the cartoon drawings, mm-hmm. and everything. And have you looked at those? And
oh, yeah.
Yeah, she's really great.
She's kind of like Oprah now. She renamed her magazine Vim to Velour, just like Oprah's magazine's called O after Oprah. And on the cover,
magazine?
On the cover of a Velour magazine is a photo of Sasha Velour in every issue.
Oh, no, okay. Is it?
So far, I mean, I only think she has only two issues, okay. But so far she's been on every cover. So
no, that I think I'm aware she's of. Great. I think she's great. And I like her choice of music too. It's not the Pat of the Bell, Whitney Houston songs and all
she
stuff.
She won with Whitney Houston. Did she not?
Yeah, she did. But like, but the songs that she's known for doing, right. Like she does, Eurythmics and mm-hmm. Annie Lennox and like, Shirley Bassey and, you know, some of the songs that a lot of people have forgotten about. And mm-hmm.
She knows her history.
Yes. Mark, you came with this.
I had a revelation.
Aha moment.
Aha moment.
A psychic moment?
All right. So you
a psychic
know,
moment, a sure.
Well, not a psychic moment. It was just kind of like, oh, maybe it's something. Observation. So this is another thing. Because we keep examining, you know, we examine the show. We're like, why did this person win? Why did this person lose? What are the things that could have added up? And I wonder if Shay's costume on the red carpet from her Coming to America, she wore like a Coming to America look from the movie from Eddie Murphy. Uh-huh. If you've seen that movie, Coming to America, where he's like an African prince. He goes to Queens because he wants to find a queen, right? Okay. And so she did that look with the ponytail hair and then the black dress and everything. And I wonder if that was like a trigger for RuPaul, because RuPaul and Eddie Murphy have some sort of history. Now, we asked RuPaul about what happened. Did she ever go on a date with Eddie Murphy? She said no comment. She wouldn't talk about it.
Arsenio Hall on his own, mm-hmm. on the Arsenio Hall show, said that Eddie Murphy, when the first time he saw RuPaul, said, "Hey brother, can you hook me up with that?" And Arsenio Hall said, "I don't think you realize that that's, you know, a person pretending to be a woman, mm-hmm. and is not, you know, right. in costume."
That's Jesse's cone of shame that he's got right
and,
now.
And Tracy's getting him excited. So we asked RuPaul, you know, what happened between you and Eddie Murphy? And she was like, no comment. Mm-hmm. And because I guess Eddie Murphy had been...
There are some allegations among the trans community that Eddie Murphy is attracted to trans women. And there was one case of a trans woman who came out years and years ago saying, like, oh, I had an affair with Eddie Murphy. And then she ended up they found her dead, like she had fallen or was pushed off of a building. So a lot of trans women were like, Eddie Murphy killed her. Now, those are all that's all speculation.
It's very dark rumors.
I'm not going to say anything then, because I got some gossip, but I'm not going to unleash that.
Really?
Okay. Well, God, you're saying that scene is so I could get killed.
Wait, you got gossip on Eddie Murphy?
No.
Or on RuPaul.
No, not RuPaul. I love
RuPaul. I don't think Eddie Murphy or RuPaul is going to hurt you at all.
No.
No, but I've heard for years, that Eddie has been with this girl and that girl. And it's kind of in the community. So, I don't want to.
Well, we've all heard those rumors.
Yeah, though. Everyone's
and
heard
I've heard
that.
Those independently and, from you.
And I've heard them from
for years
from
too,
from good sources and more than one that didn't know each other. So I've heard that whether it's true or not, I wasn't there, so I don't know.
But the reason you're bringing this up, Mark, is because you're saying that Shea Coulee triggered on RuPaul some unpleasant memories of dating Eddie Murphy at the time that Coming to America was a movie in the theater.
Because she might have she might be like, Shay knows about this, that shady little bitch. She's not getting this crown, triggering me like that. But I don't know. This is just speculation.
No.
Well, you don't know what's going on in RuPaul's head, do you?
I do know that Sasha Velour gave an amazing performance, and on top of it all, it has was never in the bottom, never had to lip sync the whole season, was always at the top. So it was not a surprise to me when she won.
Well, and I guess Shay has not done stirring up shit. She recently announced that she's going to be recording something with Azalea Banks.
Oh, okay.
And Iggy Azalea.
Well, she didn't mention anything about Iggy Azalea, but Iggy Azalea is also doing something with Azalea Banks. Okay. So I don't know if this is some kind of Bad Girls Club.
Does she rap?
Shay?
She can
do anything.
She can do anything. But, she's a performer. She's a trained performer.
Another article that I saw, and maybe I'm misunderstanding this, is that Azalea Banks, the African-American artist, is collaborating with Iggy Azalea, the Australian problematic artist.
Well, Azalea Banks is also
and also Australia. And in order to sort of rehabilitate everybody's career, they're bringing in Shea Coulee for the collaboration with both of them. So it might be Azalea Banks is just doing like a duet album and she's bringing different artists into it. Or it might be like, we are the bitches that everybody hates. We are the ones. Fuck you all. We're gonna. Nothing's changed. There is hope that's crushing. We're gonna make things worse. It's all about me. So fuck yourselves. Come on, everybody.
Yay.
That would be kind of awesome, actually. If they did a USA for Azalea Banks. And just be like, all the bad girls standing on stage in a chorus.
And Nicki Minaj in that too.
Snooki. Lindsay Lohan, Paris Hilton. It would be great.
So, there's a lot of people that really respect Azalea Banks as an artist, I couldn't really say that so much as for Iggy Azalea, because the people are like, she's Australian, she's not black, she's a white girl.
She talks, and then suddenly when she goes to rap, it's like, where did that come from? It's so put on.
And she doesn't write her own lyrics. If she wrote her own stuff, you might have Eminem, he writes his stuff, so people are like, I respect that, but they don't really like because they're just like, you don't write it, you're not part of it, all it is appropriation. Now Azalea Banks, she's got some skills, but then there's some problems there, with the LGBT community, because she's said a lot of terrible things, and I feel as though she used the F word for faggots, and I feel like RuPaul called her out on that.
Yeah, I think even Shea Coulee and the kids are on the Reddit forums are like, I got timestamps, I got receipts. What's going on? So I'm curious to see and I know Shea Coulee has no problem calling Azalea Banks out to her face about shit.
So
I'm curious to see how this is going to go.
Don't you think that's what rap is? Don't you think that rap, they kind of get a pass on everything? Your listeners are probably going, no, hell no. But, I think they're supposed to push buttons and say things that, I think, look at Trina. Trina?
Explain to the audience who Trina is.
Trina is a rap artist, and she has the filthiest lyrics ever. And, I mean, I...
Like, what's one of her lyrics? What's
oh
what's
my God.
I'm looking at her. She's
my pussy and my crack. No,
not her.
So what you're saying, to finish your point.
I just think that, you know, like, that rap lyrics are meant to be shocking, are meant to be shock value. But I guess with the
there's a tradition in rap music to be a rebel.
Azalea. Yeah, and confrontational and in your face, yes.
Yeah, so to say the N-word, the F-word, you know, the F-word being fag or faggot or whatever, you know, to say words like that, it doesn't faze me. Because they're meant to push buttons and they're meant to, you know, is it right? I don't know. Like, you know, we've talked about this on the podcast before. Like, so many people need to calm down about words. I really believe that. And don't be disrespectful to us.
Words can be very hurtful.
Yeah, I agree.
And what's wrong with being courteous?
Yeah.
What's wrong with being nice to one
but
another?
But we're so PC.
Let's rap about nice things.
No, that's true. Right. We don't want to do that.
I know, right?
But it's like we have like PC'd ourselves to the nth degree.
And by PC, you mean what exactly?
Just all this PC stuff. Like everybody has to be so PC. And it's just
but what
like,
do you mean? Without using the term PC, what are you trying to say?
Non-offensive.
People are worried like about stepping on each other's toes.
Everyone is so worried they're going to offend for this or offend for that. And then on top of it all, it gives people the right to be like, oh, no, she didn't. She, you know, it's like, you know, it gives them...
The call-out culture.
Yeah, it's like, you know, just calm down. Like, so what?
Well, it feels like a lot of that stuff is exasperated by social media.
Big deal.
Well, I think there's a need to be courteous and to be respectful, and there's also a need to be rebellious and to be confrontational. And when it comes to making art and culture and even in, I would say even in media. And when we're talking about, you know, being respectful to other people's needs, there's nothing wrong with saying, you know what? I'm not going to use these words because I have other words that I can use. Or if I'm going to be using these words, I better be prepared to have the consequence of those words being brought upon myself.
So, but as a rap artist, using words that may offend other people, that doesn't mean that. Say that there's a movie that depicts a rape, a violent rape. So, are you going to attack that movie and say that's offensive? Or they're telling a story, just like a rap.
Well, here's an example. Like Silence of the Lambs came out as a film, there was very little representation of trans women in films that was not a homicide. Killer, and you know the movie Silence of the Lambs. In hindsight, or as history marches on, is both a really amazing film with great acting, writing, and directing, and at the same time, it's a hilarious transphobic portrayal of society's anxieties at the time.
But
and
I
so,
wouldn't even say
so
that
we,
trans
like,
character.
As LGBT people, look at Silence of the Lambs both in kind of like in a loving way because it is a great film, but also in a mocking way because of its emphasis and interest in this grotesque portrayal of a killer who comically is yelling at a woman in the yell, "It puts a lotion on its skin or else it goes, gets the hose again." Why not just, if you want to put lotion on her skin, why not just shoot her with a hose that sprays lotion? It
but
made no sense.
What is wrong with us that we think that that movie, like, just because they're portraying a, let's say, I don't believe that that character was a trans person. That was, you know, there was
and they,
some
they went out of their way
there.
to point that out. But it was about a representation of somebody who was demented and tying that into gender nonconformity.
Like, but what about us? And this is just a question. So what about us? Do we think that why do we why are we thinking that is to be a reflection of us? That is a story that they're telling that they happen to call that person a shemale or a whatever, you know, like, so that happens to be, like, let's say, let's just, like, take the LGBT out of it and say, like, a movie about a violent rape. Mm-hmm. That's offensive, okay? So that... But that doesn't mean that every man that works at this job that this character works at is raping his wife. So why is it that when we see that, we don't say, you know, we're not saying, oh, well, God, boycott that movie because every person that works at a fast food joint is raping his wife.
But is it? But the
that's thing, what they're the trying to say. No, that's not what they're trying to say. They're trying to say that this character, this is a story. This character is raping his wife. This is what the story is about or whatever. You know,
the point, though, the people, especially when Silence of the Lambs came out, is that the when they had representation of trans people in the uh-huh. movies, they were always as some kind of psycho killer.
That's
and so
true.
There wasn't any other option. You didn't see anything else. You didn't see anyone else doing just like, you know, the happy housewife or somebody, you know, incredible artist or
Laverne
somebody
Cox.
Fighting a war or something like that. You right. know, you didn't see any of that. And so like, why is it every time you see that? So if you had like to take your example of a fast food franchise guy, like if he's working at the store or whatever, like if we made a ton of movies and it was all about the same stereotype of a guy who works at a fast food store, you know, out there, committing sexual assault on people, then the people will be like, why you keep making this movie over and over again? So that's the point of it, is about representation.
And the movie right. Rocky just, Horror Picture Show parodied mm-hmm. that tradition in Hollywood by having Dr. Frankenfurter be this gender nonconforming homicidal killer. And you know, mm-hmm. at that time period, and this was what, 1976,
the movie came out?
People were 77. Then aware of the fact that there was a mm-hmm. huge misrepresentation of transgender characters in Hollywood. Now, fast forward to today, we've had an extraordinary past couple of years with trans representation, both in the small screen, and that's the internet now, not television, and in the big screen, in motion yeah. pictures. And I'm kind of curious, because you know and have a lot of friends who are in the community, what your trans girlfriends and you have to say about all these people. So we put together a list of just off the top of our heads of some of the more talked about trans personalities. Especially, this is mostly trans women in uh-huh. Entertainment. And, you know, and somebody who's been really talked a lot about this past year is Peppermint, the drag queen from New York City, who became sort of the first major out trans person to come out before she went on RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yeah.
And you, how are you feeling about Peppermint? Do you feel like she should have gotten the crown or?
No, I don't think that her lip sync was as polished as Sasha. I love Peppermint. I loved her. My favorite part, my favorite runway that she did was the where she was dressed all in those that peppermint garb and stuff. I love that.
That was a club kid look, I think, right?
Yeah. And
that was her strongest look of the whole season, I think.
In my opinion, yeah. But she had great looks. She's an great artist, and I loved her. I do think that when she came out as trans, I think that me included, like, it was a little bit hard to see it. Now I see the woman that she's become now that she's shown the public with the finale and everything, getting breast implants. You know, I see the picture coming together. But I, you know, they edited her as just a regular, you know, guy.
Is it hard for other trans women to accept other trans women who don't have breast implants or
because
augmentation?
No, but like a lot of girls are non-op and, you know, whatever. But I did think, you know, I did think that seeing her in that light pre-transition, obviously she had been transitioning. It wasn't just something that she decided during the show. If anyone I thought was trans was a pheromone, you know?
Yeah, that could be too.
Yeah, I mean, when I first saw her, I was like, she's transitioning because her skin was really smooth and her hair was grown out and, you know, all the signs. I didn't see that with Peppermint. so when she started saying, you know, I'm trans and stuff, I, at first I thought, well, really? You know, I, not that she, not that, not.
You didn't see it in her, the way you saw it in other people.
And just, I mean, well, I guess gosh, I don't want your listeners to hate me for saying, well, it's not all about looks and about looking like a woman. You're right, it's not, but it's just, I was shocked.
I mean, because we had interviewed her before and she had talked about being trans and doing drag. So, like, I was like, when she got on Drag Race, I was just kind of like, do they know she's trans? Because, you know, there was rumors that they would never have a trans person on there. But when we talked to her about audition, we're like, audition anyway. Just, you know, if you have to do boy drag to get on the show, do boy drag. Because that's one of RuPaul's her big complaint, I guess, with some trans people. Yeah. And why they somehow some can't do drag because they're too wrapped up in their identity. And so they can't they can't change that identity to perform for something else.
Caitlyn Jenner, this is certainly very talked about.
Your gal pal, right?
Your gal pal.
My gal pal. It's but,
you know, Caitlyn Jenner is somebody, we're friends with a lot of trans people, and a lot of those trans people made it onto the TV series I Am Kate. Right. Certainly Kate Bornstein.
Yeah.
And certainly Jen Richards were a big part of that series.
So you're asking me how I feel about her. So
well, how does you and your trans gal pals feel about Caitlyn Jenner? Because what I've heard from them is everybody's really unhappy with Caitlyn Jenner's politics and statements and trying to court Ted Cruz.
Here's the thing. Mm-hmm. So as far as Caitlyn Jenner goes, you're putting me in the spot, but
I don't think it's an unpopular thing to say. I fucking hate Caitlyn Jenner's guts.
No, so here's the thing about Caitlyn Jenner. I do think that in her heart, she thinks that she's helping our community. And in a weird way, she has helped our community. Okay.
I think she has. Yeah.
She has made us more visible. Whether it's the right kind of visibility, I'm not sure. But you know, you're entitled to have, you're entitled to be Republican. There's the log cabin Republicans. You know, there's a lot of gay Republicans. You know,
go proud.
Yeah, you know. So it's like, get over it. Let her be. She has her stuff. You know, she was essentially for how many years a wealthy white man. You know,
So she's enjoying some of that male privilege.
I think so.
And wealth privilege, I guess.
My thing with her is just that, I think America, and I've heard stuff, you know, being said and stuff. And I just think my thing with her is that her transition was too abrupt and she went away and got surgery and then came back on the scene, acting and talking the same exact way as Bruce did. And she didn't fully, as a trans woman, whether some people think it's fake or not, I don't care, but you need to work on your voice. You know, you need to work on your mannerisms and you.
You can go to Starbucks and be like, I want to fucking.
It is. And then if you're going to claim yourself as the trans spokeswoman for the world and not polish your look and not that's just off-putting to the middle America to see that.
Well, I wonder when you say like she rushed her transition because, you know, she talked about during the 80s had done some hormone and then stopped doing it because, you know, it was a hard concept for her to wrestle with, and so decided to go off and then went back on. And there had been rumors for a very long time because as Bruce was growing hair out, getting nails done, and people were wondering. And so there was a speculation for years and years.
We all knew.
So, you know, I don't know if I don't know if I necessarily feel like it was very rushed.
But here's the thing within my transition, and I think most trans people know this, is that people that know you as male before you transition will never, ever fully accept you as a female once you do transition, no matter how much you transition. And I really.
What are you saying about your friends and family or who?
Yeah. You know, you know, I transitioned at work, and people that still know me as before, I still see that little glimmer in their eyes that they will never fully accept me.
Well, do you feel like we're that way? Understand?
No. You never knew me as before. You've only known me as my true self. So I don't know. I have a lot of opinions. I just, I don't think that every trans woman needs to act like a girly girl or whatever. Or I don't think every trans woman needs to be passable. I don't think every, you know, whatever. But I do think that if you're going to claim that you're, I would rather have Andrea James be the spokesperson for the transgender community. You know,
well, can we all have a wide variety of voices? Yeah, I mean, yeah, isn't sure. that the whole idea? Is not to have one sure. person. For Laverne Cox for a while was the singular spokesperson for trans America.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that was a hard burden for her to carry as an actor. You know, I feel in some ways that she's pursuing her passions as an actor. And, you know, that being, you know, on the cover of Time magazine in some ways held her back on the kind of roles that she might be able to pursue or get offered. You know, and I feel like it's unfair in some ways because now she's a trans woman first and an actor second.
Right. I agree. You know, I think, you know, that new show that she started, Doubt, that got canceled. You know, I think that, I think it was a great idea.
She was a lawyer.
Yeah, she was a lawyer.
And her transness was not a major part of the story.
It was like with Katherine Heigl, and people just hate her now. I don't know why they hate her, but really? They just hate
okay.
her. They used to love her when she was on Grey's Anatomy, and then they hate her.
But I don't think that the part was written well for her. They had her acting like a giddy little schoolgirl and like going, oh, really? Like Valley, like girl, like, oh, really? And like, that's the part for you. that's not Laverne at all. That was so not believable. So I think that was a little off-putting. But I support Laverne in so much. I love her. She's amazing.
Do you remember Charisse, who was on Glee? She was a YouTube superstar, and she got cast on Glee. Yeah. And she has transitioned and now is known as Jake Zyrus. And so
Charisse Pimpenko? Yeah.
Yes. This is Jake now. It goes by Jake. Goodness. At the end of June, so last month we didn't get a chance to report on it. So congratulations to Jake.
Wow, that is news.
Was what character did Jake play in?
I feel like
was one of the cheerleaders?
No, she played Charisse. She played some character where she was this nerdy girl that started, and the main girl was jealous of her, right?
And we actually got to, I don't know if you remember, before Charisse or Jake was on Glee, we performed with them at Milwaukee Pride Fest. We didn't really know who they were, and the manager...
Charisse was there?
Charisse was there before...
Was I there? No.
I don't know if you were there that year.
That I was there.
It may have been. But Charisse was a YouTube star and had not been on Glee yet.
Okay. Yeah, we wrote I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar as a trans anthem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Tracy sang that to much fanfare.
Right before Natasha Bedingfield. Do you remember that night?
And it was, you know, very, in hindsight, very questionable lyrics. Mm-hmm. I'll give you guys a taste.
It's a questionable play. It was part of a skit.
So I'll give you guys, and I wish, you know, in hindsight, I would have written better. But, you know, when you know better, you do better.
Because this was written for the Olympics in 2004 and rebranded for, when did you do it? 2008 or 2012?
No, it was 2008, yeah. So it goes, I will go to Mexico. Well, they will cut me a new hole, and I'll be reborn an Olympic athlete. I'll come back even stronger, not a man any longer. As a woman, I'll be ready to compete. Oh, yes, as a man, I went through a life of pain. And yes, I'll pay the price. Just look how much I'll gain. If I have to, I'll slice off anything. I am strong. I am invincible. I'm a woman, an Olympian. Hear me roar. Ooh, Do you remember that?
I can't remember. I can't believe you remember the lyrics. Well, because I remember those lyrics.
I've worked with so many people over. We did that with Sharon Needles in San Francisco. We did that with David Serta at Steamworks. No, with you. Yeah,
I did it at Steamworks, too.
You did it with Steamworks at us and at Milwaukee Pride Fest and with David Serta in the original Feast of Fools show. Yeah. We've done that bit for a long time.
Okay.
And, you know,
it might be time to retire.
It's time for a retire it. It was fun to sing.
It's a fun song.
It's an outrageous song.
It's a belty song.
Yes.
I am woman, hear me roar.
And I saw it from outside the stage because I wanted to see it from outside.
Wanted to see the audience reaction to it.
There was a bunch of lesbians hanging out by the beer tent right there, and then they heard that song, and they all like kind of looked up like, "What's going on up there?" Because they recognized the medley, but they're like, "Those aren't."
I remember I was in a swimsuit, and it was pouring down rain. It was a tornado warning.
It was gorgeous.
You know, Natasha Bedingfield. She went on after us, and she stomped around on that wet stage in 6-inch heels like nobody's business.
She got paid.
She
didn't want to go on, though. There was a tornado and a thunderstorm. And she sang...
stayed.
What was her song? Unwritten.
Yeah, Unwritten. And she's like, I got a pocket full of sunshine. It's like, oh, really, girl? How big is that sunshine?
Really quickly, I want you to weigh in on this stuff. Jen Richards, star of Her Story, also was on...
I don't really know her. I don't really know much about her. I saw her on I Am Kate. I have girlfriends that know her, love her. I don't really know her.
She's a gentle sweetheart.
But I don't know. I don't know most of these people. But
she's been on the podcast a couple times. One time in the home studio because she used to live here in Chicago, and then she's like, "I'm going to go out to LA and make my dreams come true."
And she did.
She's very intelligent. I do know that. Super smart. Yeah.
Jamie Clayton, a star of Sense8.
I love Jamie Clayton.
Is she dating Keanu Reeves?
I don't know. Like, first of all,
they kissed.
I'm not friends with all these girls, so I don't know. But
you're friends with friends who are friends with
them. Yeah, that is true. But
you know the T on the T.
No. So Jamie is not dating Keanu Reeves. So I will say that for the record.
But
so.
the paparazzi, the press, and the tabloids are trying to push that narrative. And maybe, you know, in order to promote Sense8, they're building people's interest in the show by, it's like, what's going on here?
What's the big deal? Jamie Clayton is post-op. She has a vagina.
You're not supposed to talk about that, Tracy.
But she's open about that. She's a post-op trans woman.
Okay.
She's had SRS. She's been very open about that.
Listen, there's a lot of people that say they've had it and don't.
Okay. Well, Jamie has. And so, wasn't she even naked in Sense8?
She may have been.
I think it's very healthy that we're having a trans romantic storyline
in the tabloid press that is not sensationalistic. It is respectful to her privacy, unlike here. And ultimately, I think it's a very healthy and progressive sign that things are getting better, the fact that the tabloid press treated it as a typical Hollywood rumor, a love story. And they were not like, is Keanu Reeves into trans women, you know, or T-word this and that. They were very respectful in how it was portrayed in the media, and I think they did an excellent job. No thanks to Katie Couric, but
I saw it a different way. Yeah. I saw it that they jumped on it and was basically like, Keanu Reeves is dating a guy, and
that's what you saw.
That's not what they said, but that's maybe TMZ.
I felt like it was between the lines.
And you know what? Here's the thing. So I think, I think there needs to be more men that step up and date trans women. It's like, we're just women, you know? It's like, maybe
Bethany
we can have
Black.
Children, but
let's talk about
who's
Bethany.
I love her. And I think that she...
Who is Bethany Black?
So here's my issue, okay? So Bethany Black is an actress. She's a British actress on Banana.
She's in the series Banana and Cucumber.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Like, I guess my whole thing about trans is that there's only one trans... archetype or archetype. that we want to embrace, and that's the glamorous Laverne Cox or Jamie Clayton. You know, kudos to Jamie Clayton that she, you know, took the makeup off and went and for a very natural look on Sense 8. And
but Laverne Cox did the same thing in Orange is the New Black. I mean, it was not a glamorous role.
But still, she had that hair done and everything. And, you know,
I mean, whole season she spent in solitary confinement with, you know, scars and blood and bruises on her face.
Well, I guess you're right.
But you feel like the media tends to push Laverne Cox as more as a glamorous figure.
Yeah, I think so. And like Trace Lissette, gorgeous girl, you know.
And she only portrays herself sort of more bare bones. But without a lot of makeup.
Oh, I guess it's okay. So let me rephrase this. So, like, I guess they're all the ingenue types, the ingenue type trans girls. I feel like Bethany Black is more of a character actress trans girl, and I think that's great. You know, maybe just because I identify with that more, because I'm more of a character. You know, I'm not an ingenue, and so I see myself in her. I think she's natural. I think she's just an everyday woman in her portrayals, you know, that it happens to be trans. And I think I want to see more of that. I want to see more of that and not all this, you know, these glamazons. And it's not, we're not all glamorous.
Alexandra Billings is somebody who's been a big part of Chicago's theater scene, a very important theater teacher to millions, not millions, but, you know, hundreds of actors all around the country. And now Alexandra, you know, besides being well known for being one of the first trans actors to play a trans character on a major television show, she's now a regular fixture on the Amazon series Transparent.
Yeah, I love Alexandra Billings. She's incredible. She's always been an incredible actress. I did Son of Fire with her in Chicago years ago, like in 92, 93. Oh, wow. She's amazing.
What's it like to share a stage with Alexandra Billings?
She is the diva.
So you feel like in some ways you're like standing in her shadow or...
Well, no, I was just in the chorus.
And oh, okay.
I was just a replacement, and she was amazing. She was an icon then in Chicago theater.
We did a live podcast at the Center on Halsted, which is Chicago's gay and lesbian community center, with Alexandra Billings and other trans thought leaders. You were there.
I was there, yeah.
And I, you know, interviewing her on stage in front of a very adoring audience, I did feel like I was the third wheel on a date between her and her fans.
Yeah.
And Mark and I, we were like, you know, very enraptured by her message of love and of owning your true, authentic true self in a way that's not superficial or trite. And it's a very difficult thing in this day and age with all these aphorisms. You know, if you can't love yourself, how the hell are you going to love somebody else? You know, it feels disposable. It feels superficial. And Alexandra Billings, as an acting teacher and as a thought leader and as a trans, I mean, certainly a trans role model for many people, was somebody who really put those ideas in a very meaningful and deep way for a large group of people.
Yeah, I think she's amazing. I think she's incredibly intelligent. I think she has a lot of insight. She's been around, you know.
Forever.
She's, yeah.
Forever.
No, I mean, because she was an icon in the early 90s, you know. And Honey West was at that that thing that we did, right? And she was there and she spoke. And
Honey West is our gal pal. Alexandra Billings and Honey West for years shared a cabaret stage.
My birthday twin, Honey West.
Did they do the Vampire Lesbians of Sodom together?
Vampire Lesbians of Sodom with the Transparent director.
And they Jill did Soloway. Diva Diaries together too, right? Was Alexandra and Diva Diaries? So, yeah. I know Honey was.
And so. I believe Jill Soloway is coming out as gender non-binary.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So. And they just they had the first child in Canada was born, and on their gender marker, I guess, is a U for like undecided, or the kid
undisclosed.
Can just decide for himself. The parents are like, listen, people impose this kind of stuff on all the time. I want my kid to just decide on their own.
Yeah, when I'm walking Jesse, our dog, in the park, people goes like, is he a boy or a girl? And I'm like, well, Jesse, I'm not able to communicate with Jesse. So I'm not sure what Jesse's gender identity is, but Jesse was assigned male at birth. And people just go, their eyes go, and I really like how that conversation.
I just say, Jesse doesn't conform to humans' gender constructs. And I usually get women going, yeah!
So, guys, I'm an old-fashioned girl. Mm. I live in the suburbs. I don't know. I don't understand all this. But, you know, I do think, you know, there are two genders. And if you decide that you're not, then that's something that you decide later on. But I think when a child is born, you know, visually, I think they need to assign them a gender.
Because it accomplishes what?
It accomplishes the fact, you know, that that this is their genitalia. And
well, some people are born intersex, for example.
Yeah, but also, that's true. But also, too, it's like, who needs to know? And oftentimes you understand what a kid's gender identity is by 2, 3, 4 years old. They know.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know. I just think
I think that it's important, and this is the reason why, is because we do have all these gender constructs around it. And so let the kid, you don't have to be like, a boy does this, a girl does that, you're a boy, you shouldn't do that. And so your kid's going to grow up and just be like, I can be whoever I want to be. And it's like, and like, well, hey, listen, I want to use the boys room or something, you know, or I want to use the girls room. And so eventually you'll figure that out.
You remember that Ally McBeal show where they had that non-gender bathroom? Like,
that's with hilarious scenes in
that. We need to have that. Like, we
most
need to,
places
like,
do. Most workplace, especially large corporations, who have offices or stores or, you know, dispensaries and in many different districts, they have to have a uniformity. And so I've been observing that is if in the workplace, if they want to be equitable, they're going to have gender non-disclosing accommodations.
Yeah.
So otherwise, you're just basically opening up yourself for a lawsuit eventually down the road. Because, you know, it's about equal accommodations.
Yeah.
That's all.
You know. I'm all for blurring the expectations of gender, but owning one gender or the other, I guess I am. I don't know.
I don't know, Tracy. Sometimes you feel like a nut. Sometimes you don't. Some days I feel like a woman and some days I don't.
Some people may be mad at me for saying that. And I don't blame them, but I do think,
well, because in your experience, you've put so much energy, time and thought into being this woman that you are. And some people, your family and friends and society, have fought you. And so it might be a little bit difficult to understand somebody who says, you know what, I just want to try this instead of, you know, living in this place full time. I want to be a tourist. I want to visit female land instead of being a permanent resident.
Okay.
That's all. You know, some people want to be bilingual. Some people want to have dual residency. Some people really like to live in male land or female land, but they were born someplace else.
I think the fact that people declare themselves as non-binary, I think the fact that they do that is calling focus on who they are. So when they walk into the room, they say, by the way, I go by he, they, or they, them, and those, or whatever, you know, pronouns, and y'all. I'm gender non-binary. And so it's like, why even point that out? Just be you. And I don't know.
How often do people walk into a room and be like, call me they, and them? You know, I mean, sometimes I get, like, if we interview somebody, we'll get like a little sheet to help us, like, you know, their gender pronouns. But I don't know.
It's not very common, and it's absolutely fine. You know, one thing that I ask a person is, how do we best introduce you to the audience? We did that with you, right?
Yeah.
I could do all sorts of things to say, you know. Because the way I'm going to describe you to an audience is not the way you want to be described to an audience.
Rather than call out people, I have been in situations where somebody walked into a room or somebody that I worked with, I was told, by the way, they were introduced. By the way, they are referred to as them, those, and theirs, or whatever. I'm sorry. I'm like going to become the most hated guest on your show by saying all this, but that's just how I feel. And I'm not saying that you have to become like 100% like hyper masculine, 100% hyper female, but I'm just saying, just be you and stop all this PC about the pronouns and everything. It's like, get over it. We get so worked up on words. And this goes back to what we're saying about words.
If we were here and somebody continually called you a he, you would throw a fucking fit. And so, you know, give them that same leeway you give yourself.
Okay. So, but, all right. Okay, let's just leave it at that.
I know what you're saying, though. It can be a little tedious sometimes to have to remember other people's pronouns and stuff. Because we're used to living in that world where this gender thing is just
the binary.
The binary, it's like this: you're either this or you're that. And so now those walls are breaking down now. And there's going to be some shifting, and there's going to be some changing of consciousness. It's going to be, you know, Oregon just has the gender marker for X for undisclosed or... what is it for exceptional?
Exceptional.
And so we're really going to change the way we think about these things.
But see, I don't want it to be like Thailand, where trans people have to put a T on their...
Oh, they have to?
Yeah. And I would never be able to be an F. You know, I would never be able to be female on my identification. I would always have to be a T. Mm. And I don't think that's right, because I transitioned to be a woman. Mm-hmm. So, and I am a woman because that's who I am inside.
Sure. Yeah. No, I get it.
However, there are many times when, you know, I'm at work and lugging some table around or whatever, that I feel very masculine, but so does a biological woman. You know, I think that this whole thing where I'm non-binary, it's like, yeah, we all are, to be honest with you. We all do feminine things and masculine things, and we, you know, women do not walk around all the time in mini skirts, heels, and makeup done up. And, you know, most women walk around with their hair piled on top of their head in a sweatshirt and, you know, and glasses to hide the fact that they have no makeup on. You know what I mean? And so, I'm just saying that people are people, and most people are walking through the world not thinking about what gender they are, what gender they're portraying themselves as. They're just being themselves. So I'm just saying, just be yourself. But somehow
they want to identify that to other people.
I want to do a quick shout out to Little Gay Blog, who's been listening to us for quite some time. And discovered us by just searching for podcasts that pursued his interests organically on iTunes.
That's awesome.
Little Gay Blog said, I had a Goldilocks experience when I first listened to Feast of Fun, and I was trying out other podcasts I had downloaded. From my very first listen to Feast of Fun, I knew, like Goldilocks porridge, it was just right. Fausto and Mark have a huge influence on not only my writing, but also my life. Not only have they introduced me to a lot of interesting shows, people, movies, pop culture moments, in the roughly 4 years I've been listening to them, it feels like they've become friends and family. Not in a weird or stalkerish way, I assure you. Whatever it is, their sense of curiosity about topics I'm interested in, or their similar sense of humor, I feel a deep sense of connection to them. Thank you so much for that.
Sweet. I do, however, want to make one correction in your reporting. They do say that we release one free podcast a week. And it's actually much more than that. We do put some things behind a paywall, but it breaks our heart to put things behind a paywall. So because we just want to share it, but it's a good way to kind of like get people to subscribe, because we really can't make this podcast without subscriptions. So if you're not a Plus member, sign up today.
Where do they do that?
You can do that at feastoffun.com/plus.
And if they want to make a one-time donation?
They can do that at feastoffun.com/donate.
And get some fabulous t-shirts at our store, feastoffun.com/store. Or where you can buy, we have a new product
for sale. We have a new product, and it is a service. And because we get, every now and then we get people wondering, like, hey, can I come by? Can I check out this podcast studio? Can I sit in? Or can I watch a recording? That kind of thing. And so now we have a great way to kind of formalize that. Also, too, it's like, podcasting is such a great medium, and it's enriched my life. And I know it's enriched Fausto's life, and it's enriched your life, too.
Definitely,
right?
Yeah.
You know, for sure. And so people want to learn more about it. So now they can schedule a tour of the studio, and then we can come in and they can check it out, and we will answer all your questions to the best of our abilities.
This is the bathroom where I take a shit. This is the kitchen where I drink a glass of milk. There's a lot of it's a cavern of wonders. People describe it as a museum in some ways to LGBT history that's organic and living here in our home studio in Chicago. Right. And for a very small price of,
I think we said it is $100. So that's our initial price. And so what you get with the studio tour allows you and a guest, because a lot of people, like, you know, when they're working on a podcast, they're working with somebody. So they usually want to have two people. And so they also sometimes too, like, they're like, I don't want to go in the stranger's house. So can I bring somebody along?
Sure.
And so it's $100. So it's for you. If you just want to come alone, it's still $100. Then if you bring somebody with you, that's just $100.
And what do they get when they come into the home studio?
They come in, I'll have light snacks and refreshments, and also they can look at the process, they can look at how we record things, and they can ask all sorts of technical questions.
It's a giveaway, basically, because, you know, a podcast consultation is going to run you between $500 to $1,000. And you get to actually witness this process organically. And, you know, maybe you're just a person who wants to support the podcast and you want to meet us. And this is a nice way to make it accessible to people who might be curious. They might not know if they're sort of kicking the tires on becoming Feast of Fun Plus members. They want to see where their money is going into. For simply $100, which is not a lot of money for a lot of people.
But you get a
cavern of wonders of digital media and LGBT history.
You guys are the pioneers of podcasting. Yep. You guys really pioneered the whole podcasting movement, and that is no joke. I mean, if people don't understand that, they need to get with that, because you guys started podcasting when nobody knew what a podcast was.
Well, long before Serial ever came along.
Seriously? I mean, how long have you guys been doing this? Like, since 25 years or 20
years? We posted
years?
Our first podcast as Feast of Fools in 2005, but we'd also...
In February.
But before that, we'd also been posting like audio files of like live shows and things.
And video. And we were posting videos on a blog before YouTube in 2004. Yeah.
So
led to us doing audio programming that started early on. Our first podcast was about the Super Bowl halftime show a year after Janet Jackson had showed her nipples.
Ooh,
and how that had affected media. And you know, our first couple of years shows were rough, and they were, you know, rough around the edges. And I think actually we owe a lot to the trans contributors that have come on the show throughout the years. Certainly you, and I don't want to out some people because they're still don't want their trans status known, but some of the very popular guests of this podcast were and are trans people, and trans people have always been an important contributor to LGBT culture. And to me personally, I think I wouldn't be where I am today without the contributions of Kate Bornstein, and her friendship and her writing and her books have really informed me and inspired me long before there was a trans movement at all.
Yeah, so who better to see their studio, to get tips about podcasting, to learn from than you guys? So
yeah, and we actually be like,
and I don't know, and if anybody mistakes. Else is doing this. So it's like, you know, yeah. If you want to see a podcast studio, come in and see one.
We make a lot of mistakes on the show, and you can learn from our mistakes and be better at us than us or whatever. You know, you're like, I don't need to learn about that and stuff. Maybe, you know, somebody who's been doing a podcast for 13 years might shed some insight into your process, into the way you work, that other businesses or other media opportunities don't. Mm-hmm. You know, when you go to a professional corporate radio station, a lot of the machinery, a lot of the system is hidden behind walls and doors. Here, we're just exposed out into the open, raw, naked, vulnerable.
Are you going to be naked during that tour?
Emotional.
No. It'll be all very
It's a metaphor.
Of course. But, you know, another reason is
$100 on every charge, at least $350 an hour, you know what I'm saying?
I get a lot of requests from people that want to help but don't know how to help. And so this is, you know, if you want to learn and help, this is the way to do it.
Yep. Here's how to do it.
And if people want to follow you, Tracy, on social media and Instagram, you're on Spotify.
Yes. Go to Spotify, December Rising. Subscribe to my December Rising.
You can subscribe to
you're authenticated, right?
On Spotify. Verified.
That's it.
Subscribe to me and follow me. And I'm working on a new EP, and I started a year ago. I started a show tune album that I'm going to be releasing, and I'm finishing that. But I should be in fall coming out with a new EP of three songs called Politics and Greed. It's kind of my bitchy take on, it's not bitchy. It's kind of my take on what's going on in the world. I thought the country.
What does EP stand for?
Extended play.
I thought it was like excellent pussy.
It's you know what it means. It means less than 10 songs. Mm-hmm. It's not an album. It's not a full album. It's
Who's
three
doing
songs.
Full albums anymore?
I guess December Rising is because I released I'll Always Remember. Please go on Spotify. Ting.
What song should we play at the end? Play us out on one of your new songs. Do you remember the track? I'm putting you on the spot.
This is a fun song, Diva in a Man's World.
Okay. Tracy Tyler, Diva in a Man's World, under the name December Rising. Or you're changing your name to Tracy T. Right?
Yeah, because there's a rapper named Tracy Tyler.
Fuck him.
And he's wanted me to drop my Twitter name. I'm at Tracy Tyler on Twitter, and he wants me to drop that so he can have it. So I said no, and so he said he's now the Tracy Tyler. So
he ain't shit.
I am the first. I am the first Tracy Tyler that
and
ever.
Still the best. Tracy Tyler, it's a pleasure seeing you. I love you so much.
I love you guys too so much. And I miss you so much. And next time we're going to talk about lots of sex stories, right?
Yes. I'm ready. Say so.
I'm ready when you are. Bye, everybody.
Bye.